It is a great privilege for me to be here and share part of my story with you. Let me start by painting a picture of the market that we target as a banking institution. Perhaps if I do that, it will become clearer what exactly we want to be. Zimbabwe has a population of more than 16 million, I think around 16.9 million people, of which more than 7 million are adults. Financially speaking, 15 years plus. Of that adult population, around 3.8 million people have formal bank accounts, meaning that around 4.2 million people or so do not have formal bank accounts. But the best thing that has happened to our country is mobile money. With mobile money, we now have more than the adult population, more than 10 million people who can access financial services in one form or another. No formal bank accounts, but with access to some financial services, be it in the form of payments, and certainly these people would hold mobile purses on their phones or other terminal devices. That percentage, which is more than 100% of the adult population, is probably the highest in the region and would be amongst the highest on the continent of Africa. So Zimbabwe is not down in so far as broader access to financial services is concerned because mobile money came in to fill the gap. Although in relation to formal bank accounts, we are amongst the lowest. In terms of the percentage of people with formal bank accounts, and who are adults. And there are so many reasons as to why people don't have formal bank accounts. One of them is the excessive costs. You keep your money in a bank account, the banking institutions levy their charges, and it becomes less and less. And while you keep it there, there's no other value that you get. In the past, if you kept a deposit in a bank account, rather than your amount depleting, you would see some monthly interest earned being credited to your account, and the amount would probably rise gradually. But that is no longer the case because of a number of reasons. The other reason is lack of confidence in banking institutions. We all know what happened since the hyperinflation of the years, I think 2005 to 2008, 2009, which resulted in dollarization and monumental loss of value, especially for those who had banked their money. The result was a significant loss of confidence in banking institution. That combined with the various bank closures. So loss of confidence is one of the factors why people don't have formal bank accounts. People are afraid that tomorrow we change our currency and you are told your money is now RTGS or some other token, and enforced exchange rate which may not be very close to reality. The other reason is cultural. Some people would rather do mkando, kana what they call marounds, where they pool resources with their close circle of friends and they take turns to mobilize those resources and apply them for whatever business they want to pursue. They are comfortable in that setup. They don't see any value in banking their money. So there are a number of these reasons as to why people do not have formal bank accounts. So as we set to say what kind of bank do we want to be, it was very clear in our minds that to try and fight the war of the unbanked in a formal manner is fighting a losing battle. Because there are many reasons as to why people don't want to be formally banked, most of which are beyond our reasonable control. So when we look at the kind of bank that we want to be, our target is not just to deal with the unbanked, the informally banked. That has become a struggle for the past, not the future. Because innovations have come in to plug the hole and ensure that people have access to financial services. I'll give you an example. An example is during the previous financial year, our bank, in partnership with EcoCash, was able to extend more than 200,000 nano loans to pensioners. Something that was possible because a bank connected with mobile money to meet a financial need. These are numbers that were not possible before. But because of the advent of mobile money, it is now possible. I do not know whether the term neobank accurately summarizes the kind of bank that we want to build. Neobank in the sense of a digital first bank. Although a digital first bank is relatively new, but my view is that a mere chase after technology is not sufficient. We must always be very clear as to exactly what our value proposition is, exactly what it is we intend to deliver. It is clear in my mind and in the minds of my team that what we want to deliver is banking convenience to our customers. Banking convenience that utilizes all the tools that are available to make you get on with your business in the most convenient manner. That is what people need. And here I'm repeating the same thing that I said more than 10 years ago when I was interviewed by one of the broadcasting corporations in South Africa. They asked me, you know, we've got this young population that are technologically savvy, that want to access banking through their phones and so on. I said, I don't think anyone is looking for a banking experience. I think what people need is convenience. They want to get on with their life. If they are playing, they want their bank to follow them where they play. If they are working, they want their bank to be there where they are working. If they are on the go, they want their bank to be there. That is what people want, to carry on doing what they love to do with the least inconvenience. So the bank should not go there with a basket full of their products and services and say, we want you to experience us. No one wants to experience a bank. People want their own life experiences and they want the bank to be there while they pursue their lives. It is very clear to me and to my team that that is what is critical. A neobank per se has its own problems. Not everyone can afford a smartphone. The percentage of people with smartphones is very low. Not everybody is comfortable to do their banking on a phone. The chairman of our bank during board induction made a speech and he said, the chairman is James Mushore, and he said, you know, when I started banking, my dad used to bank with Standard Chartered. And he said he didn't want to go to any other branch except the branch where he opened his account. And his reason was because my money is there. His concept was that the money was kept at that particular branch where he went and he got good service and opened his account. That's cultural. And there are many who are like that. So when we then decided to come up with a strategy of the kind of bank that we want to be, we decided we want to be a hub. If any of you are familiar with ICT, they will know what a hub is. You know, that gadget with many ports that you can use where you have a local area network to interconnect all the computers that you have in that network so that service can be delivered at each and every person's desk. We want to be a hub. And a hub that uses digital technologies, cyber tech technologies, for purposes of delivering the banking service conveniently to our customers where they need them. That immediately presents us with a big challenge because we are an existing bank. And as with all existing banks, you know, banks are heavily invested in infrastructure. The branch network, which is the traditional mode of delivering banking services. We say to ourselves, we have to transition from that. And that transition, we have to manage it and do it in less than 3 years. In our transitioning, number one, we need to take into account that customer, because there are many, who still believes that there has to be a visible entity, a visible something, for me to have confidence that this is a bank. At one seminar that I attended, one of our good customers in Bulawayo, who is into the consultancy businesses, and he helps rural folk with various of their matters, came to me and he said, Tien, you want to get rid of branches? My customers are up in arms because they say, we love Tien Cybertech Bank. But what is this that they now want to do? They want to get rid of the branches. They don't trust to conduct their business on their own terminal devices because they think that's not the bank. This is just my phone. What if I just lose all my money? So the first thing that we said we need to do is to remodel the traditional branch. And I'll explain how we are doing that. The traditional branch is populated by people, from branch manager to ops supervisor to custom service operators and so on. As we speak, we are working on a pilot project where we are saying for all the branches in Harare, we are going to have one manager. In Harare, we have got how many? Four branches, is it, HK? Four branches. We're going to have one manager. So we designated a center as our management center. And we said, look, technology is technology. In the past, CCTV cameras were used for security purposes only. And we said we are going to use interactive CCTV cameras as a management tool, not just for security. So we have a room where the manager sits with screens, and the manager can see all the branches under her management. From the moment the customer walks in to the till points, to the waiting area, from one place. The CCTV cameras are interactive. She can do a public address to customers generally in the banking hall. She can ask for specific customers to go into an office so that she can have a one-on-one with them. And one of the very interesting episodes that we had is Mr. Kapfunde went to the center and identified a customer and said, I want to talk to that customer. She went into a room and she was talking to the CEO of the bank on demand. She was so excited and had an amazing experience. So what are we doing here? Number one, we are leveraging on existing technologies, which have always been there, but were restricted in use, only used for purposes of security. And we have said it can be a good management tool, a better management tool, because when you are a manager and you are in situ, you can only see those things that are within your sight. Around the corner, you cannot see. But when you sit in the management center, you can have a 360-degree view of not only one branch, all your branches. And at that center, we're going to pull out the ops managers from the branches. The ops manager will also sit at the management center, which means in the place of four ops managers, you have one. And so on and so forth. And with the aid of technology, we are now working on ensuring that the maker-checker mechanisms can be done virtually. So we will end up with a situation where we've depopulated our branches. As matters stand, we've made orders of self-service kiosks. So in the place of the bank tellers and so on, we're going to install self-service kiosks, so that those of our customers who want to see a physical existence will walk into a center where there are self-service kiosks, and they can, and with an ITM, if they want a teller on demand, they can punch a button and virtually a bank teller will appear and they can discuss the banking business that they want. So we are in the process of converting those branches into self-service centers where we utilize existing technologies to manage. Now, the impact of that is our cost of running branches and our staff costs are going to be reduced significantly. As we speak, when we took over the bank, the staff cost to revenue ratio was above 60%. Now we are sitting at 24%. What will happen? Our target is when we meet the 10% threshold, what we have saved in cost will be passed on to the account holder. Because we have said to ourselves, and I was very clear with my team from day one. I said, why do we hold such an expensive license? Because a banking license is very expensive. If what we wanted was the fee income, the transactional charges, we could simply be mobile money or something else that are not required to keep a minimum capital requirement of 30 million. The reason a bank is required to keep a minimum capital base of 30 million is because they are licensed to make money on the liability side of their balance sheet. In other words, they are allowed to mobilize your deposits, apply the deposit through lending. At the moment, if you look at all banks in Zimbabwe, the revenue structure is skewed. Most of the money, including most of our money, is coming from transaction charges and funded income. But I say to my team, if all we want is non-funded income, why can't we be that thing which is not a bank? Because we don't need the stringent deposit requirements, the inspections from the Reserve Bank, and all those hassles, so just that we earn fee income. We are where we are so that we can give confidence to our customers in order for them to deposit their money with us, which we can apply through lending and earn interest income. By earning interest income, we are developing an economy. We are giving people access to capital that they will use productively for purposes of developing an economy. So the transformation that I'm talking about enables us to focus on core and to be a bank in the proper sense. So that's the first thing you will see, a physical existence where the roles formerly played by people are now played by machines. Management is centralized and it's more efficient and it's tech-driven. Pillar number two. We have started a process of integration with other consumer-facing businesses. What do I mean? We realize that our asset management company, Ten Asset Management, manages portfolios for the majority of the bank's high net worth individuals. So we say, why do those people have to go to the bank to access banking services? Let's appoint Ten Asset Management as a banking agent so that those people whose portfolios are managed at Ten Asset Management can access the banking service there. And we have an arrangement with Ten Asset Management. And I clearly instructed my team to follow every asset manager, not only every asset manager, every stockbroker, so that those that focus on investing in the financial markets and the stock markets can access their banking services there at their broker, whether the broker reaches them physically or virtually. I've asked them to approach insurance companies. Not for bank assurance, no. Bank assurance, in my view, is in the past. But for an integration with the insurance companies so that the insurance companies have some access to our core banking system. And where you do your insurance, there you can also access your banking services through that integration. I've said to them, talk to the supermarkets. Not to deploy a POS machine because we've deployed so many of them, but to integrate our core banking system with the tilling system of a supermarket so that when they punch the till button, the money is automatically in their bank account, including the cash that has been paid and that is in the till. That results in a transference of risk from the supermarket, because they are not experts at managing risks that are financial, to the bank. Then we can do our day end Then we can install vaults within the supermarkets so that when they flush the cash, it is already in the bank. Then we can have procedures on how they can handle that cash. An integration. Why? So that you can access your banking services where you work, where you play. Am I out of time?
You've got 10 minutes.
Thank you. Supermarkets and all other consumer-facing businesses, mobile money, like I've indicated, and we've already had a strategic arrangement, like I've indicated, with EcoCash, where we advance money using their reach to pensioners. And in that manner, we're able to reach hundreds of thousands of borrowers that are already on an existing service. So what are we? We are a hub that connects various people who offer service, whose services face the consumer in order to deliver that banking convenience to the consumer. You call us a neobank. I think we are already beyond that because we are not only about terminal devices enabling access to banking services. We are about delivering convenience that allows you to get by your life while the bank follows you wherever you are. That's the kind of bank that we are building. Impact, yes, it has impact on jobs. But if you have noticed, part of our strategy is the use of banking agents. So what it means is we've got to retrain our people and refocus them. We have thousands of banking agents, and we will recruit those of our employees who become redundant, so that they become banking agents. In other words, we are converting them from being employees into becoming entrepreneurs. If you look at the charts regarding job losses as a result of the advent of AI, you will realize that they say the banking sector is not actually going to create new jobs, but will lose out and will lose jobs because of AI. But our view is we do not need to lose out. We will retrain and refocus our people so that they become banking entrepreneurs because banking is all they know. They will go Kumsika. Munwo Kumsika probably just wants to borrow money for 7 days. As a bank, Tirikwedu, we can't advance just for 7 days unless these are treasury blessings. But if we go to our former employee who says, Inini ndinemisika, inewanhu wekuti I will collateralize mriwo yao and so on. And ndinoswera ndiripo, ndichiona collateral yangu. Saka ndipei mari, ndonoita lend to them because I know them and I can better manage the risk. That's the kind of agency for individuals that we are looking for, which will cater for the needs of the larger part of our economy, because our economy is now largely informal. I was talking to my sister who is into microfinance last night, and she said, look, market is informal, and we are told this size. Imimi, as banks, let us be so that we can focus on the markets that we know better. We will be integrating with institutions of that nature that know some of the markets we wish to serve better by allowing them to continue what they do and integrate with them in order for us to add value to what they do. That is the kind of bank that we are building. That's why we decided to call it a cybertech bank. It was deliberate and not a neobank. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
I've
You sit on the left, I sit on the right. As we start, if you've questions for Tawanda, please raise your hand. Right. Valentine, right at the back there, I see your hand. Tell us who you are, where you are from, and let's get talking. And one thing that I hope we are able to do by the end of the day yesterday is to be able to identify heavy lifting issues that we can all come back next year and say, we identified these issues. This is the progress that we have done on those issues. And one thing that would want the lawyers in this room and the people in the startup space to help us facilitate Parliament having a startup bill in front of them so that we help the startups in terms of the legal environment, the financial environment, incentivize angel investors and people that take a long-term view to invest in startups, protect their investments, incentivize them, and have a pool of cash going to those kind of people. It's happening all over the world. There wouldn't be a Silicon Valley if there wasn't an enabling legal environment to allow that. Valentine, please proceed.
Hello, everyone. My name is Valentine Mwamba from Trevin Associates. In your presentation, I missed a little bit of it. I had a call outside. It sounds like you're straddling close to embedded finance in your bank. Is that a correct assumption?
I think there could be many ways of describing it. We are in the middle of being a digital-only banking institution and being a bank with a physical, visible appearance. There isn't any of its kind in the world at the moment. But that is a bank that will manifest through asset managers, through insurance companies, through microfinance institutions, through supermarkets, and with all those tentacles, you'll be able to access banking services. We decided to call it a cybertech bank.
Okay. Dr. Wazara, I see there's a lot of hands. You've provoked a lot of people. Well done.
Thank you
Yes.
very much. Tien, I was riveted at your presentation, and I have two things I'd like to comment on. Firstly, it sounds like for us lay people that you're going to bring healing to people that have had that have felt abused by banks or have had no capacity to stand for themselves, especially where these issues of charges are concerned, where the first call I get from my bank is that you are now overdrawn on your Zig account. And I'm thinking, I put money in the bank. What are you talking about? So I look forward to that because I think that is going to be a very welcome development in the country. What I wanted to ask is, with where you are going, and if you lead and you have following and other banks start to follow suit, do you think that the training that the institutions have right now, universities and these tech colleges in finance and in banking is relevant anymore? Because I don't know if those degrees have a module that tries to capture something like that. Is there anything that you will want to do for those institutions? Because I'm thinking of the young people that are coming up. They all say, "Oh, Uncle Matthew, I'm studying finance and administration." Is that remaining a relevant qualification?
Doc, I've always held the view that our training is good only for purposes of opening us up to the possibilities that exist. What we are going to become is largely is shaped by our experiences and our dreams. In my life as a corporate financier, the best corporate finance minds I've met are engineers. who probably did a small course on finance during their degree program. But because of the building blocks kind of approach to problem solving that engineers are taken through, they become the best corporate financiers. You know, one of them was with an institution called Nomura. His name was Dr. Ayo Salami. I had a transaction with him. A brilliant mind, a brilliant corporate financier, but he's an engineer. And there are a number who are like that. I trained as a lawyer. I got into corporate finance because someone pulled me into it. His name was Greg Antomino. He was CEO of the corporate finance division of Standard Bank South Africa. He walked into my office at Kant & Timmerman one day. I was an arrogant young lawyer. He didn't have an appointment. He says, I want to see Tawanda Nyambira. I've got a mandate to raise money for Shingai Mtasa to build Joiner Center. And I've been told that Tawanda Nyambira can design an appropriate ownership structure because pension funds are saying to me, we are tax exempt. But once you have your traditional structure, we are going to be levied with taxes that are not supposed to be levied. And I need you to. And I was already wearing my gown on my way to court. And he said, you know, Tawanda, I'm a lawyer who then started finance. And I think you can be a corporate financier. So we walked, as we got to the High Court, he had made his case. I said, I promise I will do it. During those days, we would communicate through faxes. And then he came back. He says, we want to have roadshows where we talk to pension funds. I made my first presentation. He said, Tawanda, you take over with these presentations. I had Patterson Timber and the other team members. Once we were done with the presentations, and I designed a concept of co-ownership as opposed to joint ownership, similar to what we are now doing with the Rua properties. And it was accepted by the pension funds as a novel way of owning the development. By the time I finished, I started feeling, well, am I a lawyer or am I a corporate financier? So I had to go to Patterson and say, Patterson, at times I feel unnerved when I talk to these accountants. What is it that I need to read so that I have my confidence? And Patterson said, ratio analysis, Tawanda, ratio analysis. I went, bought books in finance and accountants, and I studied ratio analysis. And when accountants published their financial reports, and I was able to tear them apart and understand them. And at NMB, they recognized that, and they said, you are now head of corporate finance. But I'm a lawyer. So some of the things that we study in college help open us up. They give us grounding. They build our confidence because we start believing we are experts at something. And that is a very good springboard from which we can spring and build careers and businesses.
Mm.
So I would say, Doc, those studies are still very relevant.
I think, Doc, as you started praying, you quoted scripture that says, as a man thinketh, so is he. And I think that that's a powerful statement that we as Christians do not practice. Particularly in Zimbabwe, we limit ourselves because this is what the law said. We did talk about that yesterday. This is what the law said. This is the degree that I got from the University of Zimbabwe. This is what I'm supposed to do. And I think your response to the doc's question is one that says, finding a purpose takes time. It isn't linear. It's about you stretching yourself. It's about you asking, what do I need to read? Go and read ratios.
Yeah.
That's not what you read at school. And I'm hoping that the young people that are here and the slightly older ones who have not found their purpose yet, to that grating moment where you say, I feel unnerved when talking to accountants. What should I do? And for each one of us, there are grating moments. There are those discomforts which we tend to walk away from and don't interrogate. What should I do to avoid this discomfort? I'm expanding on this point because it's about purpose. It's about pushing the envelope. It's about not allowing, no, this is not how we do things here. There isn't a response I hate is that. That's not how we do things here. I am here as a client. Do you want my money or not? Can you push the envelope or not? And I don't take that as an answer. This is not how we do things here. We shouldn't allow that. Yes, there's a hand at the back there. We're going to take a bit of time. Yes, they've got a mic. I see all the hands. We'll give you the time to interrogate, to dig from Tawanda as much as possible. Yes, sir.
Good morning,
Chief.
Good morning. My name is Tekla from Alpha Media. I really thoroughly enjoyed your presentation. But I wanted to pose a question to you that in Zimbabwe, we have a huge, huge problem of change. Are you also working towards a solution to solving that problem we have?
Thank you.
Maybe let's look at where the problem is coming from. The problem is coming from the fact that we are using a currency, a US dollar currency, that perhaps our government is reluctant about, because they prefer that we use another currency. As a result, we have a situation where no one takes the deliberate effort to import coins. Banks don't do it because importation of coins is too expensive. That is why we have the problem of change. The only way the problem of change can be resolved is through innovations. If some come up with innovations like tokenizing values below a dollar in a manner that is acceptable to combi owners, owners of taxis, if they become happy to use a token. It can be a token based on airtime. It can be based on Zesa power or other tangible that people can have confidence in, that people can know that if I have this coupon, I will be able to encash it. I will give you an example. During the time that I was running a bakery before I handed it over to my sons, we asked Fidelity Printers to print a token for us to deal with the issue of change, which was in smaller denominations. People liked it because they knew if they came with those tokens, they can save up those tokens to a dollar, we'll give them a dollar. They can save up those tokens and say, I want a loaf of bread in return. They would get a loaf of bread in return. So we built a confidence mechanism around that token, which made it acceptable to our market, to our customers. So it will take innovation. Some people will see the opportunity to come up with a token that will address the issue of change.
Mm. Thank you.
That innovator probably is not us.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you, Tawanda. There's a young man up front there. As brief as possible, remind people who you are.
Okay. I thank you, Tawanda, for that wonderful presentation. My name is Mnyaradzi from ProCode Platform. And as you might know, there is a rise in the use of cryptocurrencies in the world, especially in the US, where we are starting to see some rules of the road being legislated on things like stable coins. And these stable coins have been proven to be effective, mostly when it comes to cross-border transaction. My question is, since TN Cybertech Bank is a digital-first bank, or more than a digital-first bank, are we going to see the bank moving towards that space anytime soon?
Mm.
You know, there still remains a lot of skepticism about cryptocurrencies, popular as they may be. These fiat currencies have to be based on confidence. And we've seen what happens with the normal currencies when there's a confidence crisis. You have seen the US dollar plunging and then coming back again. But the strongest, or one of the strongest currencies in the world, because of the various mechanisms that are built in to ensure that there's current, the confidence in the US dollar. Then when you look at cryptocurrencies, maybe the confidence is in the transparency. Maybe the confidence is in the technology, the blockchain technology, in terms of the security that it offers. The question is, for example, if there is a third world war, will there be sufficient confidence in cryptocurrencies to hold them up? As a bank, we are required to take into account all those factors. And as matters stand at the moment in Zimbabwe, we are not allowed to formally invest in cryptocurrencies simply because of our inability to come up with sufficient confidence assurance measures to ensure that if you lose your money, we would have mitigated all the risks that might be associated with the loss of money. So it's an area that we'll be very reluctant to delve into at the moment. We think there is enough financial instruments available, digital financial instruments even, that people who are techno-savvy can invest in. For example, there is now this whole move about tokenizing ownership of assets globally. And I think that's a talk which is bigger than cryptocurrencies, where there's talk about the development of a ledger where everything that you own is going to be on that ledger and you are going to be able to monetize any asset that you own through that system. I think that is the future of investment in financial institutions. I think we are probably already past the cryptocurrencies era.
That's a question that Stafford Massey, who is on his way right now, will be able to deal with. Stafford is an investor in crypto and Bitcoin and executive chairman of Bitcoin Africa. That would be an interesting question that we'll be able to answer. We're going to take two final questions. We're under pressure of time. There's a gentleman right at the end there. Yeah? No, him? Yeah.
Thank you. My name is Tendai Mashamanda. I'm from Mashwede Holdings. Thank you, Mr. Nyambere, for the talk. The question that I do have is more on the business side, your clients. So with this new innovation that is inevitable with the future, in terms of lending rates to businesses, which is your clients, will they also benefit on lower lending rates? And also, what education will you be able to give the clients to understand what's happening with the streamlining that will be happening, where conventionally businesses were used to speaking to their bank managers, but already redundancy will make it streamlined? How that? What is the plan on the future with that? Thank you.
Thank you very much for that question.
The issue of lending rates in Zimbabwe is a very problematic issue. I addressed it at a conference in Victoria Falls where we had the deputy governor, and I put the issue squarely on the Reserve Bank. If we look at our statutory reserving policy, and statutory reserving, it means when you deposit some money, there's a percentage of the money that is required to sit at the Reserve Bank as non-interest bearing money. So from your money that you deposit with us, we don't sit with all the money. We take a percentage, and at the moment, the percentage is, I think, about 35% of the money is taken and it sits at an account at the Reserve Bank with zero interest. So we only have access to 65% of your money. And the Reserve Bank then introduced a rule that if we have surplus in our account at the Reserve Bank on any day, they will sweep, they will take that money forcibly into a non-negotiable instrument, which is non-interest bearing. They will give you that instrument to hold it for 30 days. Non-interest bearing, non-negotiable, it means you can't use it as security to borrow money if you had obligations. At times you accumulate balances because you want to meet obligations. But the Reserve Bank can take all those balances you have accumulated and give you paper that is useless, that you'll be required to hold for 30 days. With that macroeconomic environment, how can you reduce interest rates? Mm. So the reduction of interest rates will take a lot of goodwill from the regulator. The regulator has its own reasons, and the deputy governor came back to say, look, we do that because you guys speculate, and as a result, you fuel inflation. So for us, it's a tool to control inflation. So we have got a regulatory thing there, Mr. Mashwede, that contributes to the high interest rates that we have. Unfortunately, the public only see us banking institutions, and they don't see everything that's happening in the background. That's the problem we have with interest rates. It's going to be a struggle. It will take a lot of lobbying with the regulators to ensure that we get to a point where we have a lower interest rate regime.
Tawanda, thank you so much. We're not going to be able to take all the questions. You're still around until tomorrow, isn't it?
Not until tomorrow, no, but I'm still around.
He's still around. Yeah. So Tawanda is around for engagement. I hope we pick some of the issues that Tawanda hints to, which go back to, what is your role in this mess? The Reserve Bank, the banks themselves, the corporates, and the individuals. We all have a role in this. And until we as stakeholders identify our roles and are able to face them on with an intent to resolve these issues, we're going to be around here chasing our tails. I was in Vicforce last week facilitating a similar conversation, and you can tell that we are not in sync. Nick, you want to force me to take your question? I will, because you are Nick Vingirai. Please do, go ahead.
Thanks, Toba. It's not really a question. It's just an intervention on the issue of the central bank. Unfortunately, the central bank is looking to one point when they are talking of trying to control inflation. Regulating banks is not really hinged on what they are saying, because you can regulate the balance sheet of banks in a way that actually deals with the problem that they are talking about. As a regulator, you can help define the balance sheet of the banks in a way that benefits industry. When you talk of the structure of the balance sheet by defining your liquid and non-liquid assets, you can deal with the inflationary issue in a way that actually doesn't even force interest rates to go up. It can actually help interest rates to go down.
We have so much brain power here. We could solve the nation's problem right here before driving away from Nyanga. Guys, thank you so much. Please join me in thanking Tawanda.
Thank you. Thank you, my brother.
Thank you, my dear brother. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.